In 1999, Minneapolis was the site of a top-secret meeting. The people attending would normally not choose to be in the same room. They were the CEOs of major food companies, the likes of Kraft, General Mills, Cargill, Nestle, Nabisco, Procter & Gamble, Coca-Cola, Mars, and Kellogg. They'd been called together because America was getting fatter faster than ever. A crisis was looming, and blame could end up on the foods they manufactured. This is how Michael Moss opens his book, Salt, Sugar, Fat, How the Food Giants Hooked Us. He's a New York Times investigative reporter who already has a Pulitzer on his shelf for his work on the meat industry. Now he looks at the industrial science behind creating the irresistible. Michael, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
So all of these CEOs in this room being told what was evolving at that point, a health crisis of obesity in the United States, how did they react?
One of the remarkable things about that meeting was that it was none other than one of their own who got up to give them this bad news. He was armed with 114 slides, laying responsibility for the obesity crisis at their feet and urging, pleading with them, really, to collectively do the right thing. From his perspective, the meeting was an utter failure. The CEOs acted defensively. They argued that, look, we're already conscious of nutrition as we are convenience and low prices. We offer people choices. We have low fat this, low sugar that. And most of all, our food has to taste good. And they left the meeting and they basically went back to what they do. These companies, and look, I don't view them as evil empires that intentionally set out to make this country obese or otherwise ill. The problem lies in their collective zeal to do what companies do, which is make more money by selling more products. And if those products can be healthier, they will do that. They have nothing against that. And yes, over time, though, what's tended to happen is that companies will put out what they call line extensions, a healthier version of their mainline product. The issue that Michael Mudd, the executive from Kraft, was urging them to look at was the mainline products and the overall amounts of salt, sugar, fat, calories, allure that was going into the products that sell the most. And that was the issue in 1999.
I see. Because these companies are making money. That's what a company does. But the responsibility for deciding what's healthy for us or what isn't, that's in the hands of the consumer, right?
You're absolutely right. But you have to remember, walking into the grocery store, the playing field is anything but level. The companies are doing everything they can to make you make a spontaneous decision. That's why you see soda coolers at the checkout counter. Mm-hmm. So, yes, we have some responsibility, but we're up against a very smart, cunning, if you will, formulation and marketing machinery of the process industry. And it's not a fair fight.
Mm-hmm.
Salt, sugar, fat to them is the holy grail. And they know that when they hit those amounts perfectly, they will send us over the moon. I spent time with a legend in the industry, Howard Moskowitz, who walked me through his creation of a recent soda for Dr. Pepper. He actually helped coin the term the bliss point, which is the perfect amount of sugar in any food that will appeal to us the most to get to the perfect soda flavor that would be a hit. He had to concoct 61 different flavors of sweetness, each slightly different, submitted in the 3,000 consumer taste test, threw the data in his computer, did his high math thing to come up with a very perfect one. But the point is, and one of the issues here is not that soda is sweet, but that so many products in the grocery store are now sweet that didn't used to be. And as one food industry scientist said to me, you know, companies are exploiting the biology of the child, especially children are hardwired for sugar. And so now you see breads that are sweet. Pasta sauces are sweet. Low-fat yogurt can have as much sugar per serving as ice cream.
Mm-hmm.
One of the smartest nutrition policy people I know is Mary Nessel at New York University. She said to me that she thinks one of the driving forces here was none other than Silicon Valley in the early 80s. tech stocks became so hugely popular with Wall Street that Wall Street, in turn, you know, looked to the blue chips, looked to the food industry, said, "Hey guys, you're lagging here. What can you do? What can you do for us?" That's when food companies became much more attuned and under pressure on profits. And it's a really important point moving forward here, because even when these companies do the right thing, Campbell Soup has done it, trying to reduce salt in its soups. Mm-hmm. Kraft has done an amazing series of things to try to reduce the nutrient loads in its products. Wall Street is there breathing down its neck, making sure that the companies understand that profits come first. These companies, in many ways, are more hooked on salt, sugar, and fat than we are. And they are between a rock and a hard place, because they're not just in there to make the foods tasty. They're there acting as preservatives to so the food can stay on the shelves for weeks or months at a time.
Right.
And they're there to avoid the use of more costly ingredients like fresh herbs and spices. Salt especially is a miracle ingredient to these companies. It also masks some of the off flavors that will get into food processing. So they're finding that they can dial, they've been adding so much salt, sugar, fat to their products that yes, they can dial back by 10, 15%. But when they start going deeper to really make some meaningful changes in the nutritional profile, they're finding that they drop off a cliff, both in technical terms and in taste.
Michael, how has writing this book changed the way you eat?
I have two boys, 8 and 13, who are walking bliss points for sugar. And we, my wife and I, are basically trying to engage them in a discussion about nutrition so that that they'll really want to do this. And this kind of a cool example happened the other day. My wife said, "Look, guys, why don't we try to limit our cereal to those brands with 5 grams or less per serving?" And now when we go in the store shopping with the boys, they will pull the boxes off the shelf, look at the fine print, you know, do the math. And interesting, I find that when you engage them in the discussion, they're more apt to like those lower sugar cereals. They're part of the discussion, and kids are smart. And also challenge this notion of convenience, which I think is overhyped. And I think there are any number of products around the grocery store that we actually really don't need to be dependent on.
Michael, thank you very much, sir.
Thank you for having me.
Michael Moss is author of Salt, Sugar, Fat, How the Food Giants Hooked Us.